It's time for Twit This Week in Tech with an international panel for you. Nate Langson, he writes for Bloomberg from the UK, French podcaster Patrick Beja, and candidate for Congress Brianna Wu. We have a lot to talk about, including the Chinese propaganda machine, Facebook's Libra currency, and a Nobel Prize for batteries. It all comes up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 740, recorded Sunday, October 13th, 2019. Sex-positive currency. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans makes the home buying process work for you. Their award-winning client service and support will help you every step of the way. So get started online today at rocketmortgage.com/twit2. And by Zapier. Zapier connects all your business software and handles the work for you so you can focus on what matters most. Now through November, go to zapier.com/twit for your free 14-day trial. And by Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan, and get the plans shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring, it's not easy, but there is one place you can go where hiring is simple and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter, where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the news roundtable where we discuss the week's tech news with some of the best minds in the business. And we have a perfect panel for this week's tech news. We're going to start with Brianna Wu. She is running for Congress in the Massachusetts 8th. A game developer. She used to be Space Cat Gal, but now she's just Brianna Wu on the Twitter. Hi, Brianna.
It's so good to be here. I'm not Paris Martineau, but I am Brianna Wu.
So today. Paris was scheduled. She got sick. We're sorry. We'll get her back. But Brianna very kindly said, I'll step in, probably because this is normally the period of time where you're calling donors.
That's correct.
To raise money, and anything
would
is better.
Would I rather talk tech or ask strangers for money?
That's anything is better choice. Than doing that. But you've talked about call time before. I mean, it's a necessity. Although, when you get elected, and there's a whole new batch of freshman members of Congress in January 2020, or I guess it would be January 2021, I hope one of the first orders of business is fixing the amount of money that's in politics so that you don't have to do call time anymore.
It's a terrible idea. Every second I'm in the office calling strangers, I could be going to schools or finding out about more issues in the district. I'm mystified why Congress has not voted to make it away.
You're not really mystified.
Okay, I'm
not. It's pretty obvious.
It's bad for our democracy.
But it's bad. The influence of money in politics is clearly bad. We got to fix that. Yep. We also have two people not in the U.S., which I think is fantastic. Patrick Beja is here. He is from FrenchSpin.com, our favorite francophone. Hello, Patrick.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me. We don't have Paris, but I am in Paris. So in some way, it's almost as good.
That's right. Instead of Paris Martineau, we've got Paris, France. 10 times better.
It's not so bad.
And not confusingly in the least, he is not Patrick on Twitter.
Listen, it's all about branding. Everyone who's heard that Twitter handle already remembers it.
Everybody else is doing the real John C. Dvorak. No, the real Leo Laporte. He's not Patrick, and I like it that way. And joining us, another European, at least for another few days, Bloomberg's Europe Tech editor, Nate Langson. If Brexit happens, do you have to change your title to British Tech Editor?
No. Let's cross that bridge after Halloween.
Yeah. Or not.
Thanks for bringing up the B word within 2 seconds. But
Well, it just reassures us Americans that we're not the only people screwed.
No, we're all in this together.
We're all in it together, kids. Yeah. What does your t-shirt say? I like it. Cruel Summer. Lover.
It's a Taylor Swift special.
Oh, Lord.
It just arrived. I liked it because it looks like the heavy metal set lists that I actually go to all the time.
But so it's a Taylor Swift. It's song. Ironic Taylor Swift.
Oh, I love Taylor Swift, but it is also kind of an ironic t-shirt to wear it on a tech show.
So now we really don't know what we think of Nate Langston. Does he love Tay-Tay? Does he not love Tay-Tay? Is he ironically Tay-Tay?
Who doesn't love Tay-Tay?
Yeah, she's a wonderful human, but my heavy metal drum kit behind me probably speaks for itself as well.
Yeah, you've got street cred, so it's okay.
This might be blasphemy. I don't have strong feelings anyway towards Tay-Tay, and Christina loves her.
Oh, my God.
Simone loves her.
Yes, your co-hosts on Rocket are, like, that's probably
obsessed.
Half of the show you talk about Taylor Swift, so that must be interesting for you.
You're running for office. You probably have to talk about divisive issues without having to take a stance on Tay-Tay, right?
Exactly.
This is theory, by the way, that the biggest battles are over the most inconsequential matters, right? That because everybody can have an opinion on Tay-Tay. You don't have to know anything. So that becomes a vicious battle to the death, you know? Economics, well, it's more complicated. But everybody's got an opinion on GIF versus GIF.
Yeah, very much so.
Very much so. Yeah, I'm not going to bring that up. That's really too divisive. This country cannot stand another GIF rift. Let's talk about China. Something pleasant. Oh my God. So this. So China's been on our minds all week because of various contretemps with China and American companies. But let's set the stage with this story from the Washington Post. This is a Chinese app that is basically, it's not required, but if you're in the Chinese Communist Party, you must have it. It's on 100 million Android cell phones in China. It is also on iOS phones. It is many workplaces in China require you have it. The app is, well, on the face of it, not a bad thing. It's an educational app that teaches Chinese people about their country. Its name, translated in English, is Study the Great Nation. And it contains news articles and videos, many of them about President Xi, the president for life at China. There's also a sense of competition. Users earn points for reading articles and commenting on them. There's a leaderboard. The Post reports at least one worker in China who has to read the articles and take the quizzes and get 2,000 points or she'll be fired. So, you know, it's kind of, semi-required in China. Interestingly, though, the Open Technology Fund, which is an initiative funded by our government under Radio Free Asia, took the Android version of the app and submitted it to a security analyst, Cure53, a German cybersecurity firm, to determine what the app can do. Now, this is the Android version. It's not clear what the iPhone version would be capable of, but in the case of the Android version, once the app is installed, it basically gives the Chinese government super user surveillance on the app, the ability to turn on the camera or microphone, to record, to see every message, to have access to more than 100 apps, I'm sorry, 960 apps, including shopping, travel, messaging platforms. It can access photos and videos, transmit the user's location, dial phone numbers, go through contacts and internet activity. It even can turn on the Wi-Fi and the flashlight. It is basically an all-powerful app, basically required by the Chinese government, installed on 100 million phones. That's the Android version. They did not analyze the Apple version, and it's possible that Apple has more restrictions on what apps can do, but it's possible not, as we know from the Zero Day that was being used by the Chinese government to monitor Uyghurs. So here's a really good example of what we don't, thank God, have yet in this country, but a government app that surveils its citizenry 100%. And I've been thinking a little bit about this because what has happened more and more in the last few maybe years, maybe months, is this little pocket pal of ours that is so incredibly useful and it does so many things for us has somewhat become the enemy in our pocket. Yep. Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp use it to surveil us. Apps vied put more notifications on our screen because they're essentially advertisements for the app. The phone seems to have a life of its own. And more I hear from users, I heard from an 86-year-old woman today on the radio show who said, Apple hasn't been able to help me turn off all the pop-ups on my iPhone. And I think she was talking about notifications. I helped her a little bit to turn those off. But she was incredibly irritated about this. It is the ultimate surveillance device. And one of the reasons law enforcement has these tools from Cellebrite, and we know the New York Police Department has it, that can unlock all the data on this phone, is because it is incredibly valuable. Is this smartphone our enemy or our friend, and should we be more concerned about it? I hear you, Brianna, nodding.
I couldn't agree more. This is terrifying. Orwellian is not a strong enough statement for this.
This is straight out of 1984, where the Winston Smith's Visa screen was looking at him as much as he was looking at it, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Only this is infinitely more powerful, the smartphone.
And I do think it's worth noting, I don't think this would fly in America. I think if our government tried to do this, we would definitely push back. There would be lawsuits about it.
Although, in a way, if the New York City Police Department has Cellebrite in the station and you get arrested, not convicted, but arrested, they take your phone. If you try to get in the country, they can take your phone and suck everything out of it. How different is that? I'm not sure it is.
It's not. This is why we need very strong privacy protections. We need a privacy bill of rights that's written with 2019 standards to look at the issues we weren't facing in 1990, but we're facing today. That is incredibly important. And it's very clear, these status quo politicians, they don't understand this stuff. They don't care about it. So I think it's really imperative that you vote for candidates that will, actively voice their support for privacy.
I completely agree with all of this. And that is essential that we get people in office in, the US and the EU and everywhere who understand the importance of all of these things. That being said, comparing what's happening in China with, what could happen somewhere else, which everything could happen everywhere, is a little bit alarmist because China has, I feel like, this week or these past few weeks, for a number of reasons, a few things happened, have kind of made us realize, first of all, how totalitarian China has become. I don't know if that's a fair way of saying it, but for a couple of decades or a few more, we were thinking, well, economic growth will make things better. And since Xi Jinping has come into power, I feel like maybe it's just that we see it because tech has been involved more, but the state has become more and more restrictive and like full on totalitarian. So I don't know. It's the core issue when the tech is being used for this, but the core issue is the nature of that state. And what's new now, and I don't know if you want to talk about this now, but it's so important, and we are so embedded economically and technologically with China that its values and its demands are bleeding into our realm. It's not so separated anymore. But if you're talking about tech only and the way they're using it, the Stasi was spying on everyone in East Germany already.
Just so imagine what the Stasi could have done with a smartphone.
Yeah. Well, what China is doing now, that's right. What they would have done.
So in a way, China is doing it. It's the nexus of, China was going through a liberalism in the 80s that led to Tiananmen Square protests and a crackdown in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And that's why there was some hope that China might be. The whole idea, I think, was, well, China, as, they're digging their way out of basically out of feudalism. But as they do so and become more prosperous, there will be increased liberalism. And I do say that with it's not liberals, it's liberalism, it's Western liberalism in China, the idea of freedom and so forth. That seems to not be the case any longer. It also seems to be changing in Russia. And then that is the big issue, because this was the week the NBA kowtowed to China.
Oh.
This was the week that Blizzard, your former employer, Patrick, kowtowed to China. This was the week that Google kowtowed to China, pulling an app that was a game around the Hong Kong protests. And the one that seems to me most concerning is Apple, which has first removed and put back under after a lot of protest, and then removed the app that helps Hong Kong protesters track the police. And then Tim Cook, who is, you know, a champion of freedom, at least in his rhetoric, writes a memo to Apple employees saying we had to pull it because it was being used to target police, parroting the, I believe, incorrect assertions of the Chinese government. And so my concern, we had a big debate over this on Friday on This Week in Google. My concern is that American companies, instead of championing the freedoms that let them succeed economically, are giving an undue influence to the Chinese government because of its great economic value to them.
Yeah, Leo, I mean, it's worth saying this is the exact, these are the exact same tech companies that tell us we have to accept hate speech. We have to accept, you know, extreme harassment, the kind of which I've received. And then they turn around and say, oh, unless it's a very powerful government asking for this thing, and then it's fine. It seems very hypocritical to me. I've been
Because it's a powerful government, or is it because there's one, it's a market of 1.5 billion people?
I think it's both of those
things. That's more reprehensible to me, because it's bowing to the dollar, not to, you know, politics or ideology or fear. It's bowing to greed.
Well, I think in, you know, there are others that can speak to this, but I think it's worth noting that Tencent has taken huge equity stakes in many American game companies. I've spent a career specializing in Unreal Engine. Tencent owns a huge venture capital stake in that. They own a huge stake in Blizzard. They own a huge stake in a lot of American game companies. And, you know, this is a price that we are paying when we are allowing this foreign investment into American tech companies. So I do think that's something we should have a much more honest conversation about.
Nate?
And it's interesting.
Okay, go ahead, sorry, Patrick. I just want to get Nate in the conversation. He's wisely staying out of it. And I'm not going to let you, recruit yourself here.
When people are saying smart things that I agree with, I tend to stay quiet, because it's easier to not put your foot in your mouth when other people are doing the smart talking for you. But I do have a couple of thoughts that sprung to mind. The first is that this is always an opportunity to vote with our wallets.
Yeah,
you know, we have a choice whether we buy a certain company's product or not. Most of us do anyway, and that is something that we can consciously choose to change if we want in the future based on what a company does. The other thing that I thought is just worth mentioning kind of goes back to the surveillance app that we talked about a few minutes ago, because we have this issue in the UK at the moment where our government wants backdoors being added into end-to-end encrypted messaging, which on a technical level raises a whole load of questions as to how exactly do you put a backdoor in something that's encrypted end-to-end. But the whole reason is to try and target terrorism and very serious crime. And what always happens is we just see the people who are actually doing that just use a different product or a different piece of software. And so my question would be, with the Chinese app that we were talking about, whether the people that the government most wants to track are actually the ones who are not going to be using Android, or they're going to use a heavily, you know, they've got a different ROM, they flashed the whole thing, they're not using that app. And actually it is the average person in the street who, once again, tends to bear the brunt of the surveillance, when the people who are most, you know, the biggest threat to whatever institution are, you know, they're off using a different product.
It's an interesting point, isn't it? This is the case with a lot of these kinds of, I think about copy protection, which never stopped pirates.
Yeah, but I think people. In the case of In the case of China and that app, it's not targeting specific people, I don't think. It's just blanketing as much of it as possible, which is just an illustration of how totalitarian China, right.
The difference is, Patrick, China doesn't have to justify it by saying, well, we're going to find child pornography guys or terrorists. We have to do that in the United States when we want to do mass surveillance. We have to make up a pretext and say, well, think of the children. But in China, they just say everybody has to have this app.
And it's a very different culture.
No, it's even worse. You know, it's.
Go ahead. First, I want to hear finish your thought, Patrick, and then I want to talk to Nate, because I think this is an interesting point.
I was going to take it into a slightly different direction. So maybe right. Nate first.
Yeah. So Nate, because I think raises the cultural argument. And this is an interesting argument that's often made by people who say, but you have to understand China and the Chinese people, they want this kind of security and safety.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bottom line that culturally, certainly in Western Europe, certainly you guys in the US, you know, we grow up with a very different view on privacy and personal freedoms, freedoms of speech and what have you. In China, my understanding, and I don't want to step out of line by pretending I know more about this than I actually do, but I do understand that the sort of that inherent feeling of privacy is just very, very different. Yeah. And what, you know, we as onlookers from outside looking in, we think this is terrible. This would never fly here. And I think, you know, those comments are absolutely correct. It wouldn't, but they're not flying here. They're flying in China, where people just have a different expectation. And, you know, we can decide between ourselves whether we think it's right or wrong, but fundamentally that's probably not going to change in even the near or medium term future.
I also want to, in that regard, point to Maciej Czaglowski, who is the creator of Pinboard and has been in Hong Kong for some time, kind of as an observer, almost an embedded journalist in Hong Kong. And on his Pinboard Twitter account, he kind of addresses this notion that, oh, the Chinese people don't mind this surveillance, his video of police chasing and beating a young woman in China. He says, no, there are people in China. The fact that these protests are occurring in Hong Kong show you that Chinese people want freedom, want liberty just as much as people in the West, that it's kind of a disservice to say to the Chinese people, oh, yeah, you guys like this. This is since Confucianism, you've embraced this. It's okay for the Chinese government to do this because that's what the Chinese people want. Now, and I agree with you, Nate. I know we're kind of culturally tone deaf. We're speaking as Americans, not as Chinese citizens. And I get a lot of email from people who live in China saying, oh, you just don't understand it. So I know that there's controversy over this. But I have to say, Maciej, who is there and by the way, doing an amazing job reporting. Here's he says, an example of why this app that's been banned by Apple, HK Map Live, is so vital. Can you tell me what color this police flag is? If it's black, people need to put on a tear gas mask. If it's blue and you're wearing the mask, you go to jail for a year. You need to know what color the flag is, that flag right here, because that tells you what's going on, and HK Map would tell you that, and that's why it's vital that HK Map exists. It is not being used, as Tim Cook said, to target police or to go to areas where there are no police to steal. It's not that at all, and Tim Cook misstated how, according to Maciej, how important HK Map is to the citizens of Hong Kong who are using it to stay safe.
I think that's why, you know, Tim Cook's statement on this, it really rang as hollow and hypocritical and, you know, really not standing up to the Chinese government. It seems like a very valid use case, as you've said. And, you know, Leah, I've said this on my show to you before, but I married into a Chinese family that immigrated here from China. And it definitely has changed my perspective on a lot of things. For instance, if you were to say this to my father-in-law, I know the first thing he would say is, well, look at how many more people the United States has in prison compared to China.
That's you're
worried
point.
About privacy.
And most of the people of color. Good point.
that would be the first thing he would say to you. I do think at the same time, this is a gut check time. This is where you show your morals. This is where you show what you're made of. I think what was so distressing about Apple, a company that I use and other people use because of their strong stance on privacy and encryption.
Yeah, we expected more of Apple, I guess.
They've spent billions building up this brand around that, Leo. And for them to just turn around and, you know, side with the Chinese government for what really feels like false pretext, it just makes me feel gross about using their stuff. There is a wider conversation we need to have here in America about our surveillance state. It's true the government is not involved in this, but I think if I sat down with a lot of your, with a lot of people that watch Twit, and I showed them, okay, this is the information I have as a political candidate that I can use to micro-target viewers. And when you start thinking about the amount of commercial corporate information out there that you can use, it's virtually unlimited. It's virtually unregulated. There's no rules about what you can say or fact checking, as we saw this week.
Yes, we could talk about that too.
I would argue, in my opinion, that the surveillance state exists in both societies. It's just more corporately focused in ours.
It's really interesting. Well, not just a little sidebar, but according to ABC, the Trump campaign is spending $1 million a week on anti-impeachment ads that Facebook is running. Many networks are running, but just $1 million on Facebook last week alone. And that's what's happened, is that the national conversation is now living in this kind of weird gray state. And I think makes it very hard for citizens to know what's going on. Go ahead. I'm sorry. That's kind of a digression. So let's continue on. All right, I'll give you one more data point. You mentioned Tencent.
Yeah.
They're a big shareholder in a couple of game companies you mentioned. That's really interesting.
Yep. Oh, a few, many of them. Activision Blizzard is quote-unquote only 5%, but Epic, which is privately held, so it's interesting that Tim Sweeney said, "I would never allow this at Epic," which I think was a preemptive strike towards maybe Tencent picking up the phone at some point.
Does Tencent? Well, how big a stake does Tencent have in Epic?
Huge.
40%.
40%. Yeah. Interestingly, I mean, Blizzard, with only 5%, has said, "Oh no!" They actually banned a Blizzard player because of his pro Hong Kong messages.
Yeah.
Well, Epic is saying, no, anything goes. We're never going to do that. But wow.
And Riot, League of Legends, who is wholly owned by Tencent, has said, we don't want any political speech in our games.
And you could say, well, that's okay.
Following this.
Although,
the thing is, it's targeted at the way Blizzard reacted to that specific piece of political speech was so expedient and so excessive that it couldn't be interpreted as anything other than trying to appease the Chinese.
They backed down a little bit, right? I think they gave the guy his prize money back. And
they did. And I think if they had done that to begin with, it wouldn't have been as big a story, but they didn't. So it's kind of difficult to forget that what happened. But that being said, I would like to talk about for just a second the fact that beyond the fact that it's happening in China for Chinese citizens or around them, we're realizing now how much this influences our end of the planet as well. There have been articles written about TikTok, for example, which enforces a very strong no political discussions.
Go look for any Hong Kong postings on TikTok.
Exactly. But it applies to everything. And TikTok is big in the West. Of course, Apple, I mean, a company
big
like
in the West, it's number one among young people in the West.
And China dictates a lot of the things that are happening in movies or, other cultural elements.
It's so funny because America used to get all sorts of criticism for cultural hegemony, for enforcing American morals and values in the world through Hollywood.
Yeah, but I think it wasn't. It's not even the same because it was American-produced culture that would, be successful in other territories. Here, it's American-produced movies, and any movie that wants to make a lot of money has to adhere by Chinese standards because they have to be successful in China as well, which wouldn't be a problem if those standards weren't established by a totalitarian regime. And the thing is, a company like Blizzard or any gaming company could, in theory, if they had, if they developed an incredible will, say, okay, we don't care about the money, and so we're going to say no, and we're going to pull out of China. And that would be achievable.
For a publicly held company like Apple, that might be a fiduciary failure. They might be, their shareholders could legitimately say, oh, no, you can't pull out of a billion person market.
For all of them, they could say that.
Yeah.
But Apple can't physically pull out of China. All of their production is there.
It's made there.
You know, if tomorrow they say, oh, we don't like Xi Jinping, we think he looks like Winnie the Pooh, all of the factories shut down, right? The next day, and Apple literally goes under.
But I would argue, look at Tim Sweeney in Epic. This is a fantastic example. And this is what I've spent my career working in. Unreal Engine 4 is much better than Unreal Engine 3, in part thanks to the massive investment that Tencent made. They redid Blueprint. It's just a far better engine overall. But if you look at Epic's track record in the kind of games that they allow to be constructed with Unreal Engine, do you realize that Hatred, the mass shooter game made by white supremacists a few years ago, that was made with Unreal Engine. And they said, we're going to allow this. Epic didn't pull the license with that. And I would argue that's a fine thing, even though there are people actually asking for DLC of murdering me and other women in that game. But my point here is Tim Sweeney, 40% stake by Tencent, and he very preemptively went forward and said, we're not going to be working with you here. We can't censor this. And that was real leadership. And I think he deserves I think he deserves credit for taking a hard line, with Fortnite being as big a hit as it is, not just in this country, but all around the world, in saying we're not going to, back down on this. That's a stand that Blizzard wouldn't take, and Apple and Google.
Because a lot of people will say, and this is part of the conversation we had on Friday, these are corporations. They are formed with one intent, to make money. We're a capitalist nation. Tim Cook doesn't have to apologize for following the laws of China because he's in China, and this is what Apple's job is. And of course they're going to follow the laws of whatever country they're in. Doesn't that let them off the hook?
But there's one big difference between some of the companies that we just mentioned and Apple. Epic right now doesn't need to back down, whereas Apple, it has concerned investors who are worried about growth, of shrinking iPhone sales, of where is the next revolutionary product going to come from. And I don't think Apple is able to sort of stand and say, okay, well, we'll just pull out of China then. That's fine. Epic is in a position where it could do if it wanted to. And I think it's a fundamental
difference. It's softwares and services. If Apple, any manufacturer, anyone who does hardware, wanted to make that kind of decision, as I was saying earlier, they physically cannot. It would take years to rejigger their manufacturing capabilities. And as we've said many times, I don't even know that they could. Maybe in Vietnam or India, who knows? But currently, if they did that, that's the point I think we were trying to make. They are being, in practice, held hostage by the Chinese government because of their involvement there. And I think we can't really throw that stone too hard, because when they started this a few years ago, or a couple of decades ago, we all thought, this is great. China isn't so bad, is going in the right direction. But now, not only is the Hong Kong thing happening, but they literally have concentration camps for Uyghur Muslims, right? And I think that's where I meet Brianna on this issue. I think at some point, yes, the company's role is to make money, But there has to be a line somewhere. And I don't know where that line is. But
Patrick,
I would say China's behavior is...
Go ahead, sorry.
I would say China's behavior seems like it is getting very close to that line, if not over it now.
I would say, you know, Patrick, I'm very proud to call you a friend. I love your stuff. Just you're amazing. But I would disagree with you here. I think it's a false choice to say Apple has to pull its entire manufacturing base out of China, or like hold a line on this one individual issue. Leo, to your point, I would argue it's counterproductive for Apple's long-term business strategy if it chooses to enable actions like the crackdown on Hong Kong protesters. I think that is fundamentally against the values I buy into when I buy Apple devices. I buy it for privacy. I buy it for a curated experience that's very thought through, and responsible environmental policies and social policies. So I think where I would just fundamentally disagree with you here is when Google went into China and they started providing a search engine function there, they had to make certain compromises, like heavily censoring Tiananmen Square, the most censored topic in all of China. That is a business decision I can understand. Where I don't understand it is when China is influencing our companies here in the United States and saying, you need to, in America, stick to our values here. And I think if they are coming and operating in our part of the world, they need to understand America just doesn't roll that same way.
So one of the things Tim Cook said in the memo that he sent to Apple employees is, it's better for us to be in China trying to change things than to pull out. That we, and this was when I, in the 60s, this was a common trope. I'd rather work within the government to change it than to be outside protesting. Is that what you're saying, that it's better for Apple to participate with China in the hopes of changing it? Is there any hope of changing China? Or is that like Chamberlain saying to Hitler, You take Czechoslovakia, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. It's appeasement is the term people use.
Yep.
Well, we don't know. 2 decades
we
ago,
don't know,
it looked
do
like
we?
That's what was happening. Yeah. Now it's looking like not so. But when is the 17th anniversary of the party, the Communist Party in China, in a few weeks? That might be why Xi Jinping is doing all this so strongly. It might be that he's afraid of, Hong Kong, but he also got himself elected president for life. He's persecuting the Uyghurs in a way that is very, strong. We don't know, but it's not looking good. It's not just we can, these are things we can live with. I guess we get into personal feelings.
They had their big military parade last week. It was the 70th anniversary. I just think that it's an important thing for Tim Cook to remember that history has a long memory. And while these are challenging things for us to decide today, this is something, think about IBM, which as recently as 2001 had to put out a press release about how its hardware was used by the Nazis to help persecute Jews. Those things last a long time, and they can be a blot on the reputation of a company for many, many decades. Yeah. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, I think there is, what do they call it, a warrant canary? When a company puts out a press release, says, we haven't heard from the FBI, and then if they take that line out, that means they've heard from the FBI and been told they couldn't tell anybody they've heard from the FBI. There is something Apple's doing today that I think will be telling. Apple's response to this will tell us a lot about its long-term intentions. I'm going to talk about that when we come back. But first, we got to take a break. This is such an important conversation. We're going to continue it through after the break. But I do have to interrupt because it's only a two-hour show. I think it's so important that we talk about this. And I know it's challenging. And I don't know if I know the right answer. I really don't. I think there's good people on both sides. That's Brianna Wu. Sorry, Brianna. That's Brianna Wu, candidate for U.S. Congress, Massachusetts 8th. Love having you on the show. Thank you for coming in. Thank you also, Patrick Beja, for joining us in the middle of the night in France. It's not much earlier in the U.K. And thank you, Nate Langson. If this is a great show to have an international panel on. In fact, I wish we had a Chinese journalist on. But, of course, he'd be shot afterwards. So we didn't want to do that to anybody. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. It's time to buy a new house. It's time to get a loan, right? That's the biggest check you're ever going to write. And, of course, you got to get a loan. I want you to do it from the right company. Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage. It's hard to find the right house. It's easy to find the right mortgage because Rocket Mortgage is doing more to help you understand the home buying process so you can get exactly what you need. It's not just some mortgage. It's your mortgage. Their team of mortgage experts are obsessed with finding the best way. Their number one goal to make the home buying process smoother for you, to keep you informed so you're not in the dark. They have award-winning client service and support every step of the way. And I love the fact that they can do this online. This has helped millions of Americans achieve their dream of ownership. We've been talking about Rocket Mortgage for a few years. I have talked to many of you who have used them. Their team really cares about getting you home. And you don't have to take my word for it. J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction. See all those awards for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row now. 9 years and running. Highest in mortgage service 6 years in a row. For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. That's pretty impressive. That means they're the best. When you work with Rocket Mortgage, you get more than just a loan. Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. Visit rocketmortgage.com/twit2 and take the first step toward that home of your dreams. Get started online today. rocketmortgage.com/twit2. Please use that /twit2. That lets them know you saw it here. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 30. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. Tell me about Tencent. This is a Chinese company, right? They're owned by, they privately owned? Who owns them? Do we know?
I believe they are privately owned. Tencent and NetEase are two gigantic gaming companies from China that have been investing. You know, they got their start, I believe, by partnering with Western companies coming in China, because, of course, a Western company needs a Chinese partner to come into the country. NetEase was working very closely with Blizzard on many games. I believe Tencent is working with them on others. And both of them have started investing heavily in Western studios, as well as, you know, many other things, developing things internally. And now they have, it seems like for the past year, every week we heard about an investment, a massive investment from Tencent or NetEase in the gaming space in America or Europe. It was, you know, millions and millions of dollars flowing in every week. And so obviously it doesn't mean that they own the speech of all of those companies they have invested in. But given what's been happening in the past few days and weeks, I think that the fact brings a pause to us.
Here's why it's come up. So Tencent, by the way, owns China's first online-only bank. It's much more than gaming now. It's hundreds of industries.
Yes.
They're the ones who signed the $700 million deal with the NBA to stream American basketball games in China. Those games, by the way, blocked immediately after Houston Rockets general manager tweeted in support of Hong Kong. They do cars. They do everything. They are in the top 10 of the world's most valuable companies. Here's why I bring this up. This story just recently came out. Good research from a website called ReclaimTheNet.org. If you're using an iPhone, Safari is sending the IP addresses of sites you visit to Tencent. They send it to Google Safe Browsing. Okay, that makes sense. They're trying to figure out if it's malicious. But Tencent has something called Safe Browsing. If you look at your privacy settings in Safari, it says before visiting a website, Safari may send information calculated from the website address to Google Safe Browsing and Tencent Safe Browsing to check if the website is fraudulent. These safe browsing providers may also log your IP address. We talk a lot about protecting yourself from your ISP, protecting yourself from bad guys on the Wi-Fi. Every site you visit is being sent to China by Apple. Now, I want to show you how you can turn that off. It's on by default. In an iPhone, you go to Safari, Settings, and you'll see under Privacy and Security, probably the most insecure setting on your iPhone, the fraudulent website warning. That's not secure. That's not protecting you. That's sending every site you visit to China. So I think of this as a canary. I think now that we know this, I want to see what happens. I want to see if Apple turns that feature off, because that does not enhance your security in any way.
Yeah, I think it's Google definitely has a role that they play as far as infrastructure. As a developer, with the last game I shipped, when we were checking to see if you had iCloud access, Google actually provided an IP that we could ping all day long on every single device that they gave to us, and we could do it to see if there was an internet connection by trying to ping Google.
And I knew that Google had safe browsing. I knew that my browser was sending. I think that was a good thing. I left that turned on. But as of iOS 12, all of a sudden, it's sending it to China.
Right.
I think that's unconscionable. Well, that's the question. So safe browsing, the idea is you would run every site you're going to visit to make sure it's not doesn't have malware on it. That was the idea. Google in its crawl will detect malware. That's why you get that pop-up, right? And to detect if it's a fraudulent site. It's not clear what Apple's doing except for that one privacy statement that they may send information calculated from the website address. That's the IP address. To Google Safe Browsing and Tencent Safe Browsing to check if the website is fraudulent. It's not going to work unless they send every single site there.
Yep. What I was going to say, Leo, is I've heard stories from both big and small tech companies about what the outcome is of Tencent putting an investment in the studio. And you know, in some cases, it's been very hands-off, not a big deal. In others, it's been incredibly heavy-handed. There's one studio where they came in and they wanted to do cultural checks on everything they're doing, and members of the team are staying up until 3 a.m. To have meetings with Tencent in China. And there's the language barrier and trying to get okays on art style and all these different things. And that's a tendency I've seen with both very large institutions and smaller ones. So I think I could see, whereas, Apple working with Google on that, Google plays more of an infrastructure role. It's hard for me to see a valid reason to send that information to Tencent. So I saw that story, and it really gives me pause because it's hard to imagine what good that would be used for.
I don't see any context that could be considered safer than not doing that. So, and it's surprising to me that Apple made this change in iOS 12. Matthew Green, cryptographer, says, what? Wait, Apple's sending URLs to Tencent? I mean, this is really fairly shocking.
We don't know a lot about this, but they don't send identifying information along with that IP,
we don't know.
I'm guessing.
Right? We don't know. Apple doesn't say. Matthew says, I know Google uses some weak K-anonymity solution to provide some degree of privacy. How about Tencent? No one knows. No one knows. And Apple has not said. And why would Apple suddenly put this in and not tell us? By the way, Green, who is a well-respected cryptographer at Johns Hopkins, says safe browsing, quote, was never safe. It was a calculated risk-reward trade-off based on certain assumptions about the behavior of Google. Replacing Google with Tencent requires a whole new set of calculations. Has Apple done them? It's interesting because when they announce a new privacy feature, he points out, they do it on stage with hundreds of reporters applauding. But when you want to send all your browsing to China, They do that without telling anybody. It's very upsetting. Do you think they'll do something about this now that this has come out?
Well, the mood around China now is such that I think everyone who gets called out on anything will have to at least appear to be doing something.
Appear, yeah. So you might want to, folks, you might want to look in your browser, and if it's sending your IP addresses to China, you might want to turn that off. At best, it's a privacy violation. At worst, I mean, you know, it's not going to make you safer. Let's put it that way. It's just discouraging to see
Apple making this decision after, I mean, this has not been a great month for Apple overall. iOS 13 came out, rather. The first two versions of it were an absolute disaster. It broke every device I had. I actually got sent 30 minutes out of town because my map froze.
Oh,
I actually had to pull over on the side of the road and have my my car physically reboot by unhooking the battery. That's how bad the new version of iOS crashed CarPlay in my car.
Cow.
And it's, you know,
had to disconnect your battery and reboot your car.
I had to reboot my Porsche Cayman, and it was a disaster. My point here is, you know, Apple used to be a company that I really felt like I could trust to do the right thing. And this is just, it's a very, very concerning development.
Wow. No kidding. Although rebooting your Porsche does not sound good either. according to the BuzzFeed, in early 2018, Eddie Q of Apple told some Apple TV show developers not to anger China. So this is not this. I mean,
he won't have been the first, Leo. He will not have been the first.
No. And and I'm sure I'm angering China, but I don't have any economic stake in China. So. It's discouraging.
Take a look at one of the recent South Park episodes. It's called Banned in China.
Yeah.
Firstly, it has an excellent death metal band in it who I think are actually from Britain. but also it's a very interesting take on that specific
They've
issue.
Always been willing to take on the tough issues, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a takeaway from this week's tech events is we're all realizing for some reason it all happened at the same time. And we're all realizing that the investments in China in many different ways are now coming with, you know, the toll is due, the bell is ringing, whatever metaphor you want to use. And we're realizing what it's costing.
Yeah.
I do want to mention that from my perspective, I'm often an apologist for big companies, so maybe it's not accurate, although I've been quite harsh on them today. I think I want to underscore again the fact that 15, 20 years ago, we felt like it was probably a good move to do all of this, and it's in recent years that things have gotten really bad and that we're realizing what's been happening now. So companies investing in China 15, 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, it felt like a win-win-win for everyone. Of course, China was, you know, communist, somewhat unsavory government, but it wasn't as bad as it's become now.
Yeah.
So it's good to keep that
in mind. I don't know what to think about it. I honestly understand if you're a company doing business in a country that you have a requirement to follow the laws of that country or leave the country. There's really not a middle ground, right?
But it bleeds into our, I don't know, society, ecosystem, everything you want to say. Between the Chinese apps that are coming here, well, TikTok, at least one, and what they're imposing on a global audience, it's not like in the 60s when we liked American movies and we played them in France, it was still, you know, American movies we would choose to watch. It's not the same now. As we were saying before, the movies are being produced with China in mind. And if China is a totalitarian regime that tells you you can say this and not that, if you want the movie to be showing in the country, the effect is global. And you know, it has to be considered in a different way, I think.
Yeah.
Patrick, I do have to say this, though. You know, I am coming at this as someone who's specifically running for office to strengthen our cybersecurity and our national security when it comes to technology issues. And when I see something like TikTok, which is a 100% Chinese-owned social media service that younger people are using, giving massive amounts of data, what they're interested in, what they look at on the screen for how many milliseconds, that's something that really gives me pause, because you're giving a country that isn't always our friend a massive amount of information on our population. So I think this is not just a business situation. This is not just a cultural situation. There's also a national security discussion to be had here. The wars of 2020 and beyond are going to be fought less with tanks and bombs and more with information. This is information warfare. So there's a very adult conversation that we need to have in America if everyone who uses an iPhone is having the IP addresses of the websites they visit broadcast to Tencent. There's a very adult conversation we need to have if everything I say in a Fortnite game could potentially be accessed by another, somewhat hostile foreign power. That's something we really, really need to have a discussion about, and I don't think we have in this country.
I mean, it's not just China. There's authoritarian regimes in Turkey, in Russia. They seem not to be unwilling to try to influence us in a lot of different ways. The United States is, by its nature, a very open country, and should we tell kids don't use TikTok? Should we? I it feels wrong to ban TikTok in the United States, just as it kind of felt wrong to ban Huawei. On the other hand, it's kind of insecure to use Huawei. It's a real challenge.
It's a challenge, but I mean, we have when Disney has a website, like, they have to go through and make sure that child, if they're underage, they don't collect certain parts of information about those children. Right. This is where regulation comes in. Of course, I don't want to say, if you're a teenager, don't use TikTok. That would be counterproductive, because teens would then run to go use TikTok. But what we can do is pass a legal framework that's thinking critically about these issues.
Do we have to build individuals safe? A great firewall of the U.S. as China has built a great firewall of China to protect our citizens from information warfare?
That seems like the wrong
way to go. And that's the problem when you're faced with an authoritarian regime. Sometimes it feels like the best defense is to become authoritarian yourself. And I would not like to see us do that.
But we can pass a version of GDPR here in this country that's smarter and better and doesn't hurt small businesses and keeps individuals' information more private. We can do that.
Yeah.
At what point do we admit that we have been in, for at least the past 5 to 10 years, a multi-state informational war?
Well, we have, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I celebrate the fact that we have freedoms here in the United States, and it would be a mistake to curtail our freedoms. But that's what happens in war, and that's one of the reasons you declare
exactly
war, right?
That's exactly the point.
Yeah.
No, but that's exactly the point of what's happening with China's influence through investments, through its attractiveness financially and the potential growth, which is huge. What is happening is that it's not just China that is, and I can't believe that I'm, beating that drum so much, but it's not just China that is targeting foreign powers. It's through its influence, it's making the actors from those foreign powers alter their behavior in a way that benefits it. And I think that is a little bit different
from what we've seen. That's different from the Belt and Road Initiative, where they're kind of using, as we have, as the U.S. is for years, foreign aid to influence nations, to build economic relationships with nations. That seems okay. But to say, let's chill free speech in the United States so they don't say anything bad about China, that seems devious and not okay. Where would you stand, though, on building a DNS wall blocking traffic bound to China from the U.S. That doesn't seem like the right answer.
That's a terrible idea.
We don't need a great firewall.
The way we do it is exactly how we're, you know, Facebook just today, or it was last night, the settlement that they came to for inflating video views by 900% versus what they really were, you know, we fined them civilly a lot of money. So what I would do is, I don't think it's helpful to make anything criminal. I think you open up companies for civil liability. You say, these are the standards with information. This is how you can share it. This is how you need to anonymize it, these large data sets. And if they're caught breaking those rules, you open them up to civil liability. And then the people affected get a check, just like Equifax should do.
But so, I got to point out, the $40 million fine that Facebook paid,
it's a joke,
is such a small fraction of the amount of money they made by inflating by 900% that if I'm Mark Zuckerberg, I'm saying, well, that's the price of doing business. Let's keep doing it.
Which is why you need regulation. Every time I come on this show,
but regulation doesn't do anything if you don't have teeth. And teeth could we use?
And with teeth.
Well, what would the teeth be? Obviously, $40 million is like nothing.
It's a joke.
It's a joke.
Let me tell you another little.
We're now
little
in Europe and in France.
Hold on, Nate.
We're now talking in percentage of revenue as maximum fines. And
yes,
that's getting there.
2% of revenue is the top fine in the GDPR. That's pretty good. Go ahead, Nate.
It was just on the topic of a joke, because every time that this comes up, I think back to maybe it was around 2015, maybe 2016. I was looking at some numbers, and Facebook made more money from the government body that promotes paying your taxes than Facebook paid in tax that same year.
Oh, God.
So, you know, I can't remember what the figures were now off the top of my head. It was a while ago. But essentially, the government was paying for Facebook ads to say, hey, pay your taxes. And Facebook made more money just from those ads than it paid in UK tax.
They're in the right business. They're in the right business.
It is their fiduciary responsibility to make as much money as possible and to use the laws as well as they can to do that. And of course they should, and that is absolutely the way it should work. And when they locate everything in Ireland and optimize their taxes to pay as little as possible, following the law in the letter, if not in the spirit, then I think that's fine. And that's why we need to make the laws more corresponding to the actual situation of the economy now. Well, and that's what we're doing in...
Yeah, I mean, but that's why we got to get the influence of money out of politics in the U.S. That's why the tax laws are the way they are. That's why if you're a giant mega corporation, if you're one of the top 400 richest families in the United States, you pay less tax than the middle class, anybody in the middle class, because they bought we got the finest Congress money can buy. Now, you, Patrick, always take the side of regulation because you come from socialist Europe.
Absolutely. And by the way, in France, I'm considered a horrible capitalist who defends big corporations all the time. I haven't done a great job showcasing that on this show, but I guess I do usually.
No, we love you for it. And I'm always glad to have you on, because that's an important point of view that really should be argued, I think.
I'm sure Brianna will agree, the corporations are not going to do more than what the law obliges them to, and they shouldn't. That is how it should work, which is why I always have
a problem. What they shouldn't be allowed to do is lobby so that the laws favor them.
Right.
I think it's worse than that, though. I mean, I think that look at the Science, Space, and Technology Committee in Congress. Look at our discussion around net neutrality, for instance. I'm not trying to be ageist here, but you do have older elected representatives. They're not native to these things. They're certainly not as interested in it as the people on the show are today. And I think that has a consequence when their information on net neutrality is coming from AT&T and Verizon and lobbyists. So I think it's a function of, with all respect, a generation of leaders that just is not as interested in this. You have a picture of Elizabeth Warren up. She is an exception to this.
I was so impressed. Yeah. Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren, running for president also, says to curb lobbying power, she wants to reinstate something that Newt Gingrich got rid of, the Office of Technology Assessment. Its sole job was to inform members of Congress about technology so that they could vote intelligently. Newt Gingrich got rid of it. And I'm just impressed Elizabeth Warren even knows that the OTA existed. The fact that she wants to bring it back, bravo, bravo.
We have a white paper about this. We want to upgrade the OTA by creating a standards committee within the OTA, which is so that way it's not politicians voting on, you know, what's going to come after AES 256 as far as our military encryption. I think we go out, we get Mozilla and other stakeholders.
You can't expect, Bernie Sanders to know about AES 256.
Right.
You can assume that your members of Congress are intelligent enough when properly briefed by a nonpartisan group on the technology to make it an informed vote.
Right. I think we've got to bring in stakeholders for this that do operate in this space, academics, lawyers, you know, people actually working at these corporations.
The problem is the stakeholders who are brought in right now are the companies like Comcast and AT&T who, they're stakeholders. All right. Would you include them in these conversations? I think you have to.
You would to some degree. What I worry about is you've got to rebuild the OTA, but in a way that, as much as it's possible, insulates it from being politically hijacked by the left or the right. Encryption is a mathematical question. And we have a very serious question in this country. What kind of encryption standards are we going to mandate once quantum computers start becoming more realistic? That's going to break a lot of kinds of encryption, including our military encryption.
We were talking about this at our last pass event in Boston last week. And we had very smart Steve Gibson and Bill Cheswick, smart people on stage who really knew this stuff. And I was very encouraged. First of all, I said, oh, quantum computing, that's not going to happen. They said, no, it's happening. In fact, it exists. But the good news is crypto folks have been thinking about this for a decade. They've known it was coming. They have good solutions. And they said, right now, one of the best solutions, just double your key size. I said, I'm 4,000. I'm 4096. They said, you already doubled it. You're good. You're golden. Double your key size, folks. That's it.
Yep.
It used to be 2048. Make it 4096. I said, well, should I make it 8192? They said, no. Let's not get crazy here.
But we need people working in that space.
But we need somebody who understands that and can explain it and make these appropriate choices. I actually trust the military and the Pentagon. I know that they are very well run, and if you don't let politicians get involved, they will certainly make the right choices.
I call you on this every time I'm on the show, and I'm not going to stop now, Leo.
Please.
You keep you and every other American I've ever heard, except maybe for Brianna. Anytime you talk about politicians, you dismiss them. And
well, that's because of the quality we have here in the United States.
No,
now, Brianna's a politician, so there are good politicians.
You see the flashy stuff. Your country runs pretty well. I'm sure there are many things that you see that you're angry about that you hear because the local minority is.
Dude, you know our power was off for 2 days because our local investor-owned power utility ignored infrastructure improvements. So they had to turn off power in case the state burst into flame. By the way, it burst into flame anyway. So I don't know if I trust the competence of the political authorities, at least in our state.
I think it does a disservice to the political process and the well-being of your country if your default position is constantly to undermine.
I agree with you.
To undermine the work of your politicians.
No, because
I think it has a perverse effect.
I agree.
Which people don't trust anything about politics in general, which means it doesn't matter. Which means that people who are not qualified get elected.
That's why people don't vote. That's why people don't get involved.
Exactly.
In its best expression, politics and politicians are merely the society saying this is what we want. These are how we forward our society. That's their job in its best expression. But I have to say, Patrick, you don't have any experience of the depths that money has changed our politics in this country. And it's, I understand why people get disenchanted. But I agree with you, the way we, what we should do in response is focus on what we can do to make it better, like getting money out of politics. No, I agree with you. I mean, this is why we have civilization, because we've come up with ways that we as a group can decide what's best for the group. And that's politics.
I feel the sentiment I get from the U.S. constantly is it doesn't matter. It's not going to get better. It does. Where the reaction should be, I hope. I mean, in France, it's pretty bad as well, but not that bad. We believe that the action of people is through government and elections and voting. And I feel like
in the yellow US, vests. You have
been tricked into. Yes, of course, exactly. And you have been tricked into a lot of the people into. Believing that it doesn't matter, so you Giving act up. Against your own interests.
Not vote.
I would say, Patrick, it is hard to do this job. I would rather do engineering almost any day of the week.
Yeah.
The fundraising is exhausting. Yeah. Being yelled at all the time is exhausting. Having your motives for doing this work is exhausting. That said, I think it's fundamentally a problem of incentives. And Leo, I think you're dead on. It is so much easier to go out to a corporate PAC and just take that money, which my opponent is doing, that funds over half of his campaign, versus like going out and talking to people one-on-one. So I think there are a lot of people that get into this job for the right reasons. They're genuinely concerned about their community. I just think it changes you over time. And I've seen people here in Boston that I think they used to be great and something just changed.
Well, because you spend so much time dialing for dollars, eventually you understand, well, that's the job.
Yep.
And that's unfortunate. Yeah.
I guess the one issue I would agree is the most important one is to take the money out of, if you know, one
for us,
issue,
I think so.
Yeah.
You know,
we have limits on that. It's so obvious for us that it has to be limited that, you know.
Let's take a little break. I do want to talk about Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg will be going to the Hill. He'll be testifying this time. It's all about Libra. And it sure feels like the Facebook cryptocurrency is starting to fall apart. But we'll talk about that in just a second. And somebody's saying, what about the new Pixelbook, Leo? Yeah, we'll talk about Google's event. It's coming up on Tuesday. And a lot more. Nate Langston is here from Bloomberg. Doing a great job, by the way. Tech editor at Bloomberg, European tech editor. He's the host of UK Tech Show at uktechshow.com. From frenchspin.com. Our French compatriot, Patrick Beja. Notice I used a French word there. not Patrick on the Twitter. And from Massachusetts, glorious 8th District, Dedham, Massachusetts, the candidate for U.S. Congress, Brianna Wu. Great to have you, Brianna Wu. Our show today brought to you by Zapier. I use Zapier. I love Zapier. Yeah, I like to code. I think coding is cool. I'm with you, Brianna. I'd rather code than almost anything else. But I know there are a lot of people who want the benefits of computer automation but aren't coders. For you and me, frankly, there is Zapier. This is the greatest way to automate all those mundane, boring, repetitive tasks. Zapier lets you build workflows to get things done. It works with everything. Tons of software, over 1,500 apps. Zapier is remarkable because it is supports multi-step zaps. So you can I'll give you an example of my Zapier I use all the time on this show. I have a Zapier that watches my news feeder, my news reader, InnoReader. That Zapier supports InnoReader. So when I favorite an article in my news reader, Zapier leaps into action without any effort on my part. It takes the article, takes the information. It posts a tweet about it to my links for Twitter feed. It bookmarks it on Pinboard. And then it adds a line to a spreadsheet on Google Sheets that I maintain with Karsten with all the show stories that we're going to cover. It automatically puts the link in my description, my tags about which show I want it to be on. This is all handled completely automatically by Zapier. I love Zapier. I've been using it for years. I have all sorts of little zaps. That's what they call these scripts. You don't have to be a coder. You just simply say, when this happens, do this, and then this. Multi-step zaps. That's one of the things that makes Zapier so good. Why waste your time doing repetitive things over and over again? If you do anything more than once, if you spend more than a few minutes doing it every week, get Zapier to do it. More than 4.5 million people use Zapier today, and on average, each of them saves 40 hours a month. That's a whole work week they're getting back. A whole work week. If you're in sales, you can have Zapier automatically engage leads, send out emails, import new customers into your contact list, notify your team, go out to Slack and say, hey, everybody, we got a new client. This is all automatic. You don't have to do those things you do over and over again. Let Zapier do them. I love it. Get yourself more time to enjoy life, to do the things you love, to grow your business. Let Zapier handle the boring, mundane tasks. Right now through November, try Zapier free by going to zapier.com/twit. Free for 2 weeks, zapier.com/twit. Think of all the things you can get done. Z-A-P-I-E-R, zapier.com/twit. I'm a big Zapier fan. It integrates with every app you use, and I think you're just going to love it. It's also fun, and it's really satisfying when you can just go, done, job done, and it just runs for years sometimes. This script that Carson and I use has run for years without any intervention on our part. It just works. Zapier.com/twit. We thank them so much for supporting Twit. We thank you for supporting Twit by using that URL. So Libra, we talked about it when Facebook announced this. Facebook was at great pains to say, oh, no, it's not a Facebook cryptocurrency. We have the Libra, what do they call it, group of, you know, 30 companies.
Association.
And they put in money and they participate, except the association seems to be falling apart rapidly. In one day, eBay, Visa, MasterCard, and Stripe all said, never mind. PayPal last week. These are all the big U.S. fintech companies are saying, is it because Mark Zuckerberg is going to the Hill to testify before the House Financial Services Committee October 23rd? Is it that, or do they know something we don't know? Is it over for Libra?
Well, it's not over.
God, I hope so. Okay, Brianna Wu, why do you hope so?
It's rare you see an idea that's so bad you think it could fundamentally destroy your country. And that's kind of how I feel about this. I mean, if you look at how Facebook has handled our democracy, I don't even want to think about how they could handle our financial system. Just as a candidate for Congress, I have to report every single dollar just about that gets sent my way. Someone offered to send me a PS4 game today on Twitter. You know, I had to make it clear publicly, like, this is Brianna Wu, the individual, accepting this, not Brianna Wu, the candidate. Imagine how bad it would be if, like, Facebook has this currency where anyone can send you untraceable money, like, through cryptocurrency. Facebook just doesn't have the credibility.
I couldn't bundle a bunch of cash in a manila envelope and mail it to you?
Yeah, it's how would I spend it? How would I put it in a bank to spend it from there?
You couldn't? Sure. So it's not.
Yeah,
it's not possible
to show up to TD Bank with piles of cash and just put it in.
I don't
there.
Know where it came from. It just
So the
Federal Elections Commission, which, by the way, I don't know even know if it exists anymore, but it's.
It exists.
Okay, good. That's good. I'm glad.
My whole team is working on it right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they say you can't accept a donation that you can't say exactly who it came from.
Right. I mean, I think the rule, if I remember correctly, I'm not a lawyer, but it's $20. Anything, like if a little old lady came up to me at church with a $20 bill, I could say this was an anonymous cash donation. Anything bigger than that, I have to report and track, which is why Giuliani is in.
Yeah, right. I think there are people who wish they could send you Bitcoin, but they can't.
I think there's a way to do it, but it's reportable. I've not had that issue come up. So if someone wants to donate in Bitcoin, get in touch with me and we'll figure out if that's legal or not.
I mean, if someone send you a check, not a check, it's not anonymous. If they send you a pile of bills, you can say, well, I can't use this. I don't want this. It's the same with Libra, with any crypto. If you receive money, you could say, I don't know where it came from. I don't want to use this. It's not legal.
Oh, Patrick, that is so sweet and naive that you think a politician would do that. That is so sweet.
No, I mean, if you would refuse, you know, legally, you can't accept money that you don't know where it came from. It's the same issue with bills and with Libra.
Marcus, who runs the Libra project for Facebook, came from PayPal. He was the president of PayPal. PayPal was the first to bail last week. He tweeted, special thanks to Visa and MasterCard for sticking it out to the 11th hour. The pressure has been intense, understatement, and I respect the decision to wait until there's regulatory clarity for Libra to proceed versus the invoked threats by many on their biz. It sounds like that the reason these companies are bailing is they're worried about the regulatory environment.
I'm guessing they maybe they have something in the works, because this is all of the payment companies,
right?
That like Libra, it's not going away. I think Facebook really wants this to
happen. Maxine Waters,
if they have to,
who is the chairman of the committee, chairwoman of the committee, said she wants Facebook to stop.
Yeah.
Stop it. Don't do it.
Yeah, she wants, but we'll have to see what happens legally and how they can make it stop. Maybe they will. But until they do.
Fill me in. I'm ignorant. What's wrong with cryptocurrency? Well, I know one thing that's wrong, at least with Bitcoin. I don't know about Libra. But Bitcoin mining now is so costly in terms of energy. Of course, the cost keeps going up as you mine. That Bitcoin mining today uses more energy worldwide than all the solar panels that have been installed for the last 40 years.
Yep.
So that's not good. I mean, admittedly, it's, you know, hydroelectric and stuff, but it's not like it's energy neutral.
So if you take the energy argument out of it,
let's take that out. Yeah,
I don't have an issue. In fact, I was very early on in my race talking about, I do think there's a role for integrating Bitcoin and cryptocurrency into our monetary system. I do think we need legal ways to do that. What I think the real difference is, Leo, is Bitcoin by design is decentralized. So if you're looking at the United States dollar and you're saying, oh, okay, I see these shenanigans going on financially, it makes sense to me personally to, diversify my holdings and to get a certain amount of cash in Bitcoin, it's decentralized. That's an argument that makes sense to me. I think the criticism of Ethereum is it's tied to these exact same financial entities that crashed the economy in 2008. Oh. And then if you look at Facebook, it's a hyper-centralized currency. So it's far closer, in my opinion, to Disney dollars than it is to an actual cryptocurrency, which I think should be decentralized.
But do you want it to be decentralized, though? At least if something starts going wrong there, you have someone whom you can go and talk to who kind of can influence the way the cryptocurrency works. With Bitcoin, no one controls it unless you can get, 51% of the miners together. Feels that something much more dangerous.
I think that's a check on it. Is that a good check on it? I think you look at the rate at which Bitcoin can process transactions. You can see clearly they need more leadership there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But so I don't that's think the answer is to pass the keys to Facebook.
Yeah. So if Facebook weren't involved, you'd be okay
Libra's
with
Libra's problem
Libra.
Is Facebook.
Facebook, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't have the credibility on this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said for cryptocurrency, and it's an anonymity, not for giving money to politicians. But, I mean, I think one of the reason people like crypto is because cash is disappearing. That was the last anonymous way to use money. Right. Every time you use a credit card, it's tracked. People, privacy advocates, would love to be able to buy something at the local liquor store without everybody knowing. I guess. I don't know.
The problem I've always had with Facebook and Libra is trying to understand why Facebook wants to do it.
Yeah.
Because Facebook relies on advertising for like 98, 99% of all of its revenue. It's all advertising. It's not going to make any money from Libra, not directly, I don't believe. So, but Facebook isn't doing this out of some kind of inherent altruism or philanthropic goal. It's doing it ultimately because it thinks it will make more money if it does. And I don't care what it says about whether that's true or not. That is going to be true. So what is that ultimate goal of Libra for Facebook? I think Zuckerberg has talked about maybe enabling more communities to be able to build up their businesses in their communities. And maybe that then means they will ultimately be competing with each other and therefore need to spend advertising. I don't know if that was Zuckerberg or if that was a conspiracy theorist that I read online, but someone said it, and it seemed like a reasonable expectation of what could happen. But with everything Facebook, there is a reason it will do something. It will be for money, and it will be for advertising purposes. And I don't like that when it comes to my money.
Yeah,
that's
you
why
have
I don't.
To wonder, what was Libra? What I mean, clearly, even if it's a coalition and it's decentralized among all these different companies, it's still Facebook coin or Zuck bucks. But so what was their purpose? You know, why did Zuck want bucks?
I think they want transactions rates to increase. I mean, the facilitating transactions is the ultimate goal. And
so,
then
yeah,
harnessing
a global,
just like
a global currency that's not tied to the dollar or the yen or the franc.
Right.
Well, that's tied to everything.
It is.
And technically,
it is actually tied to the dollar.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
very
tied to the dollar
and the Swiss franc and the yen. Yeah.
A number of currencies and other not stock, but, you know, stable investment type things. Technically, Libra seems like it has all of the good technical solutions implemented.
Right.
It's very well
We've
put together from a technical standpoint.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, not going to go over all of it, but it's the ultimate cryptocurrency we can think of today. And I believe Facebook wants one of those to exist in the world, just like companies HTML to exist in the world. And they saw that no one was doing it, and they decided, okay, whatever, we'll do it ourselves. And unfortunately, it's Facebook, and no one trusts them, so
right.
It's not happening, it seems. Maybe it will still. But I think if someone else or another entity had come up with it, if Mozilla had come up with this,
Mozilla,
I think it would be a very different conversation.
Brave, which is another browser, started by Brendan Eich, formerly of Mozilla, has its own Brave currency. Brave attention tokens, or BAT, that their plan to use it, which is, I think, kind of interesting, is to use it because it has an ad blocker built into the browser to compensate websites that you go to but aren't seeing their ads. You can pay them with BAT, which is an interesting idea.
I think about, it's hard for me to not question Facebook's motives here. And to me, so let's get back to a story in the United States. Russia purchased ads in rubles and it affected the United States election.
Right.
Imagine how much harder it would be for investigators to find out about that activity and prosecute it if your only way of finding out about that is trusting Facebook's reports about it. Would you trust Facebook to report all of that honestly when there are banking regulators to go there and look at wire transfers and all these other things? It just seems like it seems like you're giving a massive amount of power to someone that shouldn't have it. They want to keep you in that ecosystem. They want to keep you in the Facebook ecosystem, which is why they push Facebook shopping and all these things. Yeah, I just don't think they have the credibility for that. I don't think I've ever said a word, a syllable publicly critiquing Ethereum. And it's because there's just more credibility with the people putting that forward. It really is this company just flouting regulation in a way I think would be very bad for everyone involved.
Is this kind of the new normal, is that these big tech companies are going to grab, they're going to try to grab, they're going to constantly grab because they're so big and they need to grow, and they've gotten to the point now where really they only can grow by just, you know, dominating something. And it's the government's job to kind of say, no, not that, slap their wrist and say, no.
Yeah. Were the
what
cops
if governments were involved in Libra, though? What if governments got into that 100 entities association and got it? Because I think they're, you know, the fact that Facebook is doing this is kind of obscuring a potential upside of having a stable, non-energy consuming, reliable cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
It could be a good thing, just like, as I was saying, HTML is a good thing and everyone can use it and do stuff with it. I'm not sure. I don't know enough to be certain, but I don't think technically, Libra is a bad idea.
Isn't having hundreds of different currencies a bad idea? isn't the world eventually going to just say, well, we need some sort of global currency?
But I don't think the argument. I don't think the argument is that it's a bad idea. Is that it could be a good idea, but in the hands of the wrong entity.
Right.
Like that's the thing. Like Libra, overseen by a different group or proposed by a different organization, is a very different Libra to one proposed by Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, and if you're every country but the United States, I would think you'd want something besides the American dollar as well. And that's going to be the default choice, isn't it?
I mean, Libra is just an option, another option.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, yes, we want different currencies that each country can control to control their economy.
You're stuck with the euro. Was it a sad day when you gave up the French franc? You were the only country that had bare-breasted women on their money.
I think we still do. Oh. Each country has
The French euro has liberté?
Yeah, I'm sure some of them. I mean, it's Marianne. It's a symbol of the Republic. So. Yeah. It might still be there, I'm pretty sure.
That's why I love France. All right. Well,
sex-positive currency.
Sex-positive currency. Facebook's also in the news with their new free speech policy. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. But I want to show you these two phones. They look very similar. All phones look the same. Black glass, they can dial out. There's a big difference here. This phone, I spend $90 a month to use, to make calls, to make texts, to get data. This phone, I spend $25 a month. This is a phone running Mint. I love Mint Mobile. If you're tired of giving all your money to your cell company, take a look at Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile is a reseller of T-Mobile, so if T-Mobile works for you in your area, this is a really great choice. Your bill could be as low as $15 a month for the same exact premium coverage you get from T-Mobile. You get unlimited calling, you get unlimited text, you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, keep your same phone number if you want, port it over. You can also buy a phone to work with it. Every plan comes with crazy fast LTE plus nationwide talk and text unlimited. And if you're for any reason not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has a 7-day money-back guarantee. I think this is the future. This is the way to go. You can keep your number if you want. You can get a new number. You can get a new phone. You can keep your phone. They sell phones. If you're not 100% satisfied, no problem, but I think you will be. Get a new wireless plan. In fact, they've got a special deal for you because you're listening to Twit. If you go to mintmobile.com/twit, $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan, and they'll ship it all to your door for free. No charge even for the SIM. Can you believe companies charge you for a SIM so you can use their service? Not Mint Mobile. mintmobile.com/twit. Cut your wireless bill. Get the same great service you're used to. I just love it. It just makes me feel good. Now the question is, well, why do I still have a plan with Verizon and AT&T and Sprint? Well, I got to test them, I guess, but man, the minute I retire, it's all going Mint. mintmobile.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. We thank you for supporting us by using that URL, mintmobile.com/twit. So I don't know what to think about this. It's actually not so different from the rules the FTC enforces on broadcast media. Facebook says you can lie in your ads, but only if you're a politician. Does that sound crazy?
Ah.
Which you would never lie in your ads, Brianna, I know.
We actually thought, and I was so upset about this, Elizabeth Warren did this idea while we literally had the script and were producing it.
Oh, shoot.
So I wanted to produce an ad, and we wanted to use one of these NLP deep learning algorithms to create a fake person.
Yeah.
Because I had the whole Alec Jones thing, and we wanted to be very conservative here. Yeah. So we wanted to do this and then come out and say, politician X came through and has ties to XYZ and has been making methamphetamine, and just have it be the most ridiculous lie you could possibly imagine. And then we'd say, none of this is true. We can say literally anything we want because this is Facebook. No one is fact-checking this. Facebook needs to be held to the same standards as broadcast media. And I thought that would be a great ad. And but, Elizabeth Warren did it first.
Yeah, so. she did it even better, I think, because she punked Mark Zuckerberg.
She
saying,
did.
Putting a picture of Mark Zuckerberg and President Trump saying, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg endorsed President Trump, which I thought was a great punk. She bought the ad, no problem. Even though, by the way, the ad violates Facebook's rules in another way. You're not supposed to say Facebook in an ad. You can't use the Facebook trademark in an ad. So here's the thing. There is a truth in advertising law enforced by the FTC. So commercial companies can't lie in an ad. But the FCC allows politicians, even on broadcast media, to lie because, and a court has upheld this, and I think this makes sense to me, because the government shouldn't be involved in determining what's true and what's not true in an ad. So as long as the ad is sourced, which that's the other part of federal law, that's why it says, my name is Brianna Wu, and I endorse this. What do you have to say? I endorse
You actually don't have to say it in a digital ad.
No, you have to say it in broadcast, but you don't have to say it in digital because the rules are different. But in broadcast, you have to get has to be your voice, right?
Yep.
And you have to say, I approve this message.
And actually, you know who did our thing? It was Micah Sargent. He did this ad paid for by Brianna Wu for Congress. He's our voice for that.
Oh, I thought it had to be your voice.
It's mine saying, I'm Brianna Wu and I approve this message.
Oh. So what did Micah do?
He did this ad paid for by Brianna Wu for Congress.
That's the digital thing.
It's a different thing you have to have in there.
For digital.
For some digital, yes. We act in a very legally, we try to do the most ethical thing we can at any time. So the ads don't say it, but we willingly comply with the broadcast standards. But coming back to the point about not wanting the government to be involved in these decisions, I agree with you, which is why I think it was a best case scenario when CNN looked at some of these ads and said, we've looked at this and our network standards are not going to allow you to run this because it is beneath the standards we hold ourselves to.
A private company could do so.
Right.
Interestingly,
so what I would advocate.
MSNBC ran the Trump ad that people were upset about. So I saw it on NFL football. So the only network, in fact, that said no, I think, was CNN.
Correct. So what I would like to see Facebook do is partner up with someone that's a nonpartisan fact-checking organization and hold us to those standards. I think it would be good for democracy and good for the country. Slow down our process of putting out those ads because it is easy. It is very profitable for us. And, put some brakes on that process. It's not going to hurt democracy.
How is it in the UK right now, Nate? I think Boris Johnson drove a bus around for some time.
Yeah, and I actually looked up the company that leased him that bus and found out that a company subsequently leased it and recovered it to ironically promote international transfers of money between European countries and elsewhere. I wrote a little story about it for Bloomberg a couple of years ago. But right now, obviously, everything's around Brexit, and I'm a big fan of the Facebook ad library and just putting random search terms in there that are tangentially linked to Brexit and seeing what comes back. And I think the library's worldwide, right? You've got that in the US as well. I did a search for 2020, and there's over 50,000 results of ads on Facebook for the 2020 election. So I assume you can access that as well. But it's just everything on here is a standard format, and it wouldn't be too difficult, I wouldn't have thought, for the kind of company that Brianna was talking about to either scrape this or maybe Facebook even has an API for it. I'm not sure.
So this is the bus Boris Johnson drove all over Europe during the Brexit campaign.
Yeah.
And it's my understanding that this line, we send the EU £350 million, is actually a lie.
Yeah, it's basically it discounts the fact that we get a lot of that money back, and so many people, including people who are pro Brexit, have gone on the record and admitted, this was not true.
It's compelling though. Let's fund our National Health Service instead. Let's put that money in. That's compelling.
Yeah. I mean, you can't win more support for a cause than rallying behind the NHS in Britain, depending on which side of the political spectrum you are. But it's a beloved institution here. And it was always going to be the one that got people talking. But fundamentally, the number was flawed. But the damage it had done, I would say the impact.
So it wasn't illegal to do that, though. There's no law against putting a lie on a bus and driving around.
Well, there are laws against flat-out lying in advertisements, but it depends who decides whether or not something is a lie or is just misleading,
right,
and shouldn't be repeated. We have advertising standards agencies that will say, if this ad is deemed to be misleading or inappropriate, you are not to run it again. But by the time they've said something like that, then
it's too late.
You know, yeah. It's been done.
There's no particular exemption for political ads.
There are stricter rules for political ads.
It's more strict. Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, someone did try and, you know, and took Boris to court for this, and I think the case was dismissed. It was thrown out, or I can't remember how it was resolved, but certainly he didn't get thrown in jail.
There's a bizarre, by the way, I'm just going to bring this up, a bizarre side note to this, which is the Prime Minister, Mr. Johnson, has given a number of odd interviews, including one in which he kind of offhandedly said, when asked, what do you do to relax, says, oh, I make models of buses, which is weird, right? I mean, really, that's what you do, Boris Johnson? In your spare time, you make bus models. And it has been speculated, I think accurately, that he does these things, and he's done it other times too, to game Google search results. He doesn't want you searching for Boris Johnson bus and finding an image of that lie. He would far prefer you find him saying, I make models of buses.
Yep.
You think that's true? He's gaming Google search?
Well, he's got a very good PR team advising him on things to say and things not to say. He used to be a journalist. Like, that was his job before he was in politics. He was a journalist. He was on Top Gear, the TV show, as a guest at one point. He was then the mayor of London, and then he became prime minister. So he's got a long history of getting away with saying...
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
There was, by the way, if you ever get a chance, John Oliver does a fabulous take-up on Boris Johnson. Everything I know about Boris Johnson, in fact, about British politics, comes from Oliver's show on HBO, but he does a great bit on Boris Johnson, which is worth watching. I think it's on YouTube. Here from Gizmodo are the search results after Boris Johnson gave that interview. If you search for Boris Johnson bus, all you get is stories about Johnson's bizarre model bus claim. You don't get any stories about buses and lies and ads. What is it like in France? Do politicians routinely lie in advertisements, Patrick?
You're not going to believe me, but I'm pretty sure we don't have political advertising.
At all?
At all. We have, like, dedicated spaces.
How do you know who to vote for?
Journalist interviews and appearances on TV, radio, newspapers.
That's insane.
But, yeah, we're civilized.
And that's how Macron.
That's the issue. I might be wrong, and I haven't watched TV in so long, and you know I haven't been in France for a long time, and I didn't watch TV even when I was here. But I'm pretty sure there are severe restrictions, if not outright bans, on advertising on political parties. Right. And the reason is that exactly that. It's impossible to control.
Right.
You can't, you know, that's influences the population in an
You must have social media ads. Or you have none.
Yeah, but it's the same. If you have a party, we don't have PACs and stuff like that. So the party has to do its own action. And if ads, again, maybe I'm saying the dumbest thing ever and people are going to, you know, respond to me and say, what are you talking about? Of course we have ads. But I don't remember having seen an ad on TV for a party during an election.
It's a massive part of the U.S. election season. Yeah. And I can remember back to 1964 and Lyndon Johnson's famous ad against Barry Goldwater with a girl pulling petals off a daisy, 10, 9, 8, and it turning into a nuclear missile and an explosion and saying, well, who do you trust? I mean, these, and I could think of ad after ad after ad that have greatly influenced campaigns. It's widely considered that that ad, that Lyndon Johnson ad, the Daisy ad, they call it, was instrumental in his victory in 1964.
Leo, also, I think it's really important here in America to keep in mind the historical, the historical context of this. Facebook or Fox News or other political publications printing outrageous things, there is a long, long, long history of this in the United States. Right here in Boston, Samuel Adams was a radical propagandist with the printing press. When you look at the history of why the Alien Sedition Acts were passed here in this country, it was because people had a printing press and they would print the most outrageous lies about politicians you can possibly imagine.
Because the First Amendment became part of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, almost immediately afterwards, the Alien Sedition Act, which was the most dramatic restriction of free speech in the history of the country, was passed.
Correct. And most historians would agree the Alien Sedition Acts were a huge historical mistake. Yeah, so I think there are ways.
We pay lip service to free speech, but we have a historic trend of ignoring it.
We've wrestled with this for a long time. That said, I don't think it's going to hurt democracy to hold politicians like me to high standards. I urge you to do this. Yes.
I think we should get rid of political ads.
I would love
There's a middle ground. And I mean, we have there's another difference, I think, that between the UK, the US and France, where in Britain, we do allow political advertising and campaigning, but there is a finite limit of the amount of money that any party or candidate can spend on promoting themselves. You know, and there are
that's a
many
good
laws.
Start.
Yeah. So
how
you,
much
you it, can,
that might be the case in France.
How much does it cost to run for Congress in the U.S.?
The average amount they spend is $1.4 million every 10 years.
And how much does it cost to run for president in the U.S.?
I don't even know.
I've seen that figure, and it is mind-bogglingly large, many billions of dollars. And if you think about it, nobody, even someone as rich as Donald Trump, can afford to foot the bill. You've got to get money. Barry Goldwater always resented this ad. He felt it was costing him the presidency. He felt it painted him as somebody who was pro-nuclear war, which he was not. Let me just play this for you, because this is historically a perfect example of really what was an attack ad that influenced the American people. It's a little girl pulling petals off a daisy.
Zero.
And her eyeball there is now a mushroom cloud.
These are the stakes. To make a world in which all of God's children can live, or to go into the dark.
And that is the warmonger, Lyndon Johnson.
Or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd.
Can you believe
that? The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
It's a persuasive argument to say you're going to drop nuclear bombs on children.
Now I got to vote for Johnson. That's a terrible idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
Of course, he dug a huge hole into Vietnam. Was not exactly a man of peace. So maybe Goldwater would have been a better choice in that case.
But to get it back to Facebook deciding to let political ads run even with lies, how do you decide whether or not this one is a lie? I don't think you can.
That's the problem. What is truth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, Facebook in this situation, as in many others, as much as I dislike them, they can't win. They have created a beast as have many other companies that have created social networks, where they can't control what's happening there. And asking them to control it, I mean, sure, I would love for them to be able to, but tell them how, tell them what to do. And I'm sure they will be happy to do it. But we don't know and no one knows. So out of the many difficult and not ideal solutions, I don't know that this one, which, because the other part of this decision is to make very clear who is running that ad, right? I think. And if you know, then you can decide for yourself if you trust it or if it's, you know, it can be reported on and all of that.
We're going to take a break, and then all the happy stuff.
Yes! Yes! Kittens!
Kittens and shiny new toys.
I'll bring my cat in.
I've saved the best for last. You know, I have to say, I want to thank our audience, if you're still listening, because this is these are very difficult, large, challenging issues. I think they are technology stories. I think they're very much technology stories, and they're very much about the future of our world and how technology is involved in it. But I know it's tough. It's daunting. And I also want to thank our panel because you guys have you're very sensible. And I like that. Brianna Wu, Nate Langson, and of course, Patrick Beja. This week we had, the power was out on Wednesday and Thursday. We did some catch up, but we did miss the taping of one show. Our wonderful Aunt Pruitt, who's joined our company, Micah Sargent, Aunt Pruitt, our newest hosts. Gosh, everybody seems to be so happy about that. And I know I am. And thank you for their welcome. Aunt's got a new show. And we thought it'd be fun to show you episode zero of Hands-On Photography coming next week. Watch.
This is Twit.
Hey, folks, I'm Matt Pruitt. And welcome to Hands-On Photography here on twit.tv. Each and every week, we're going to take a look at how you can get the most out of your camera so you can start sharing and posting some awesome photography. I don't care if you have a smartphone or an action camera, DSLR, mirrorless, whatever it is, we're going to get the most out of your camera. We'll also get into different tips and tricks to help make your video look better. So be sure to hit that subscribe button and check us out each week here on twit.tv.
I think of Ant as kind of the Bob Ross of Twit. He's got calm. He's going to show us how to make our photos look better. He's already worked on one photo of Stacey Higginbotham.
Oh, my God. That is beautiful.
Yeah. Puffy little ear things. If you haven't seen this image, and I have to give credit to Ziv Zoolander, who did the Photoshop for this in our Twit forum at twit.community. And I haven't, I didn't get his permission to show it, but I have to say it is the best Photoshop ever of Ant. And he's in his puffy little Bob Ross hair. And he's, we were mentioning on Twig on Friday that Stacey looked a lot like Princess Leia. And so I think this really, it works. Just say it works. Bob Ross and Princess Leia. thank you, Ziv. What a good job. Our show today, and by the way, if you're not in the Twit community, you got to join us. It's our new forum. It is just great fun. It's going gangbusters. I'm already going to have to pay extra for bandwidth because it's taken off. It's easy to get to www.twit.community if you want to join. It's free, and it's just a lot of fun. A great way to talk back. If you're not watching live, you're not in the chat room, it's another way you can participate with Twit. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. We love ZipRecruiter. They have been such a boon for us. Hiring is hard. Nobody denies that. And yet, it's the most important thing you do in a company. If you're the person who does the hiring, you're building the company. The people you hire are the bricks that make that company, right? Great people can take a team and launch it to the moon. A bad person can bring it all down. And that's why you've got to hire the right person. And you got to do it fast because you're down a person, right? And often. ZipRecruiter does a couple of things that I think are transformative. First of all, assuming you've got an opening, I think you have to, that there is a perfect person out there, maybe more than one, to fill that job. But how do you reach them? There's so many job boards. There's so many places they could be looking. Well, you post on ZipRecruiter, and immediately your post goes to 100-plus job sites, plus Facebook, plus Twitter. So it's getting to the largest patch. It's getting the largest possible distribution. That's going to help. That's going to help. That means the chances of that great candidate seeing your posting is even better. But then ZipRecruiter does more. It doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. ZipRecruiter has an amazing technology that identifies people with the right experience, invites them to apply to your job. That means you get qualified candidates fast. Maybe you saw the TV ad with Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskovitz. He had to hire a director of coffee. Man, I wish I'd known about this opening. For his organic coffee company. Believe it or not, he was having trouble finding qualified candidates. Maybe because he wasn't on ZipRecruiter. Once he switched to ZipRecruiter, he got applicants fast. He said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply, and he was able to hire a new director of coffee in just a few days after going to ZipRecruiter. We've had exactly the same experience. He used the candidate rating feature in ZipRecruiter to filter applicants. I love this feature. You can screen them with yes, no questions or multiple choice or essay questions, so you don't even have to look at resumes for people who don't meet your requirements. ZipRecruiter highlights the best candidates, moves them up to the top of the list. It all goes into the ZipRecruiter interface, by the way. So you don't get phone calls. You don't get stuff in your email. It all goes to ZipRecruiter. They reformat the resumes to all look the same, makes it very easy to scan them. This is the amazing thing. And I have to say, this has been our experience. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. 4 out of 5. We got a quality candidate within the first few hours. That's how well it works. ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes, in any industry, all over the country. 1 million companies have used ZipRecruiter, including Twit. You should try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/Twit. ZipRecruiter.com/Twit. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/Twit. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. We thank them so much for their support of Twit. All our best words come from France, Patrick. All our worst words come from England.
I can't believe that. Oh, I thought you were going to say from France as
no,
well.
No, 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 no. All our great words in English are Anglo-Saxon. Yeah. And then the French words are the more fancy, the fancy schmancy words. I don't want to go into this because this is going to be political again, but have you seen Essential's proposed new phone from Andy Rubin, the Gem?
No.
Oh, this is a weird looking phone. Now, I have to point out, it's from Essential, and Andy Rubin may be a little bit tainted, but I'll show you some of his tweet. Where's the pictures in this article? Am I doing something wrong? All the pictures are gone.
Well, imagine you stretch a phone.
It's like 21 by 6. it's the strangest. It
looks very weird.
Yeah. There were pictures in this article.
It's original. I mean, it's different in a world where their old phones look the same. It's different.
He also, this is, by the way, there are some pictures on Andy Rubin, after it came out that he was fired for sexual harassment at Google and received a $90 million severance, stopped tweeting for a year, wisely, I think. But he came back to Twitter with a vengeance last week, tweeting these pictures of Essential's newest phone.
So I think, like, leaving the political aspect out of this and just looking at the technology, you have to give Essential credit. They had, with the last version of Android, they had an update ready on day one, which is something Samsung and other larger companies were not able to do. That said, I think if you look at the track record, the Essential phone, it was not successful. And I do want there to be more competition in the Android space here. And I think that's why I was so excited by Microsoft's Surface event a few weeks ago. The Surface Duo
and the Neo, aren't those cool?
Microsoft getting involved with the Android ecosystem. I think they're doing amazing hardware, and I'm just not to diss whatever Essential is working on here. I think they have the infrastructure of a company to make that happen.
Yeah. I bought the PH1, their first phone, and I actually liked it a lot. There was one big flaw. It had a bad camera, and it took them a while to fix it. But I agree with you. I think it's an interesting company. I don't think I'll buy the gem.
It's so hard, isn't it? Because you want these companies to do things, to think outside the box and do something a little bit different. And the reality is, most of the time when they do, you don't really want the product that comes out of it. So I feel for them.
Just give us our slabs of glass, please. I just want slabs of black glass. Hey,
you know, actually, Patrick, if I could just say one thing adding on to that, though, I think that's what makes Microsoft truly interesting here. What does Microsoft do really well? Their liquid data strategy is really, really paying off. It's a compelling vision for the company, especially with Azure and other technologies that they have. So I think what smartphones have lacked to really differentiate them is tighter integration with the hardware and software. So when you have an idea like the Duo, which is an Android phone that Microsoft is putting out, I trust Microsoft to go through, work with developers, get the integration, the buy-in across the ecosystem to really make that concept shine. I don't think that that's something Samsung, and certainly not Essential, can do. So I think you're really finding the limit of how much a single company without buy-in from developers can really affect the entire experience.
I have to say, Andy has an interesting track record. Do you remember the Danger Hip Top?
No.
I do. The Sidekick. I had it. It was amazing. It was a T-Mobile phone. It looked like a phone. This was many moons ago. It was well before the iPhone. The screen had this weird hinge. It would rotate up, and then there was a keyboard. It was a really cool phone. Let me see if I can.
Wasn't that the company that ended up developing the Palm Pre?
It might have been.
One of the Microsoft phones.
Oh my
God. I can't remember the name
of it. And so this screen, I'm showing a picture of it from Wikipedia, but this screen doesn't just slide down, it rotates down. It's the weirdest hinge, but it was great. It didn't succeed. Just to your point, Patrick, it was a flop.
No, the thing, I mean, Ruben has a pedigree for sure in tech, and
he created Android, you know, let's face it. But
exactly, yeah.
He's got a pedigree in other things.
Ignored.
Yeah.
Well, we could talk about that, but I don't know how much more there is to say. But yeah. I mean, the Duo is.
Uh-oh, you're cutting out. You're cutting out. We're losing him.
If reversed, and if Microsoft had shown the. Oh, sorry.
Say it all again.
If it was reversed, and Microsoft had shown the. If it was reversed, and Microsoft had shown the gem. I think it would have been a different story. And if Essential had shown the Duo, then we might have been excited about Andy Rubin's products again. Although, as Brianna said, they don't have probably don't have the shoulders to make this into a successful, wide-reaching product. Microsoft has more of a chance there.
Yeah. I mean, look at what they're doing with the ARM, basically the Surface Pro X. You know, they're putting out ahead of time, a year ahead of schedule, to get buy-in from developers to
that was a little strange.
Versions. I thought it was a great idea personally. You disagree.
It's not like they're Osborne-ing a product. They didn't. There's no product that people would, say, oh well, I'm going to wait for the Duo. So right. I guess it's okay to pre-announce it.
I'm saying it's all about the buy-in from the developers. I think this is why Apple Arcade has been so successful. This is the first time you're seeing games come to iPhone that can take advantage of Apple hardware that are not compromised from a game design perspective by in-app purchases. Yeah. It's fantastic. And Apple has really brought their muscle to market with getting top-tier developers to put things out there. We're just many years past the point where hardware alone can make a compelling experience.
Actually, Google did immediately after Apple did Arcade. Google did kind of the same thing with the Play Pass, $1.99 for the first whatever months, and then I guess it's going to be $5 a month. And it has a similar number, not just of games, but other applications that Google says no in-app purchases, no ads. This is a trend. I love it. It's a good trend. Yeah. I immediately signed up for both.
Yep.
Yeah, I love Apple Arcade so far.
What's your favorite game, Nate?
It's amazing.
I just started playing through Oceanhorn 2.
That was a good game when it came out. I loved Oceanhorn 1.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite ones is this one called Tint, which is just it's one of the reasons I love Apple Arcade is because I would never have downloaded a game like that, even if it was free. It's this weird, like, very relaxing puzzle game where you just have to, like, blend paint colors.
It's a drawing game. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not an artist. I'm a terrible artist. And I just never would have gone for a game like that. But it's soothing. And the other week, my wife was sitting next to me and she was sort of helping me and looking at it. And we were playing through it a little bit together. And I just like, this is great. Like, I never would have tried this. But because it's right there, it's just, and there's no in-app payments as well. That just makes you kind of love the experience overall. At least I did.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Brianna, but it's good for indie game studios because a lot of times big studios just won't do simple little games like this. They're focused on AAA blockbusters. And so it's nice to see it somewhere for little games that are just nice, that are not blockbusters, have a place to be. You think that's true?
Yeah. It's certainly how PlayStation Plus has gotten into the market. When PlayStation Plus first started, if you're not a gamer, this was a service where you paid X number of dollars a month. You had access to a competitive marketplace very similar to Xbox Live, and it was really great because developers could get games that were good that maybe weren't profitable for them. And then Sony would buy them with an outright fee and then bring them onto the service. It ended up being very profitable for developers that participated in that. Now we're seeing this on Apple. And don't get me wrong, they're working with, WayForward, which is a very large commercial studio that does great work. But they're also working with smaller studios. And, Apple is basically, we don't know for sure, but it seems to be from what I'm hearing from rumors, that Apple is paying a significant amount of the development costs, and depending on the time people play it for, that is how they end up getting paid. So it's introducing a financial way forward to develop games that isn't in-app purchases.
Are you any arcade game interesting you these days, Brianna? Something you like?
Oh, God, yeah. I can name 100 of them. The new Shantae game is amazing with WayForward. Disassembled. This is a really interesting story-based game where disassemble things.
I keep looking at that to download it and thinking, I don't want to disassemble things.
It's so much fun. I mean, the story is a little maudlin, but it's a very relaxing experience. Okay. And you can play it beginning to end in under an hour.
I like What the Golf because it's so silly. It's a backwards putt-putt golf game. Are you playing any, Patrick, on arcade?
I was going to suggest What the Golf.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. But, Apple Arcade has done something incredible by changing the business model. As Brianna said again, it's changed the game design of those games. And the amazing thing is that core gamers, console and PC gamers, had given up on mobile games. Essentially, it was not something for them, however good they were. And I don't think I've heard a single core gamer of my friends or people I listen to and respect say that they don't love Apple Arcade. Everyone loves it. It's
I'm so
incredible.
Glad to hear that. I wasn't sure. I was worried, also a little worried about paid games, like that the studios would say, well, I guess there's no market for games anymore on the Apple platform.
Vainglory is doing very well. Okay, that's a competitive MOBA. I play that all the time. Yeah. But I do think there's going to be a consequence that I think you're going to have people that pay their X number of dollars a month and they're going to opt out of buying games traditionally. And that's going to have a consequence. Personally, I think the game industry will be fine if we have a few less IAP heavy, fun paying games coming to market where you pay to win.
I wouldn't mind if freemium went away for good. I spent way too much money on Simpsons donuts and
I remember that, Leo. I remember how angry you got when didn't they break your account?
They broke my account and I had hundreds of donuts in. hundreds of dollars in donuts. I think I had $300 of donuts I bought.
I had a story in MacLife when I used to be a columnist for them about the people that spent $30, $40, $50, $100,000 on Final Fantasy 15 and New Empire,
feel better.
Which is a wildly addictive game.
I feel much better. So, $300, nothing.
Oh, no.
Nothing.
You actually saved money, Leo.
Could have been worse. Could have been worse. Pew Research Center does regular polls of Americans. If you thought Congress was dumb about tech, wait till you hear some of these results. Only 28% of American adults can identify an example of two-factor authentication. Even though, of course, they use it all the time with their ATM card and their PIN. Only one quarter of Americans know that private browsing only hides the browser history from other users of that computer. And about half say, we don't even know what private browsing does. Only 20% of adults answered 7 or more questions correctly. Only 2% got all 10 questions correct. I am not going to challenge you. I know you guys are smart, and I would sure that everybody listening to the show would get all 10 correct. So I won't challenge you. Although I have to say one of the questions was, can you correctly identify a picture of Jack Dorsey?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's a lame question. I'm sorry. Lame is not a good word anymore. That's a stupid. Is stupid okay? That's a dumb question. 7% got it wrong. 15% got it right. 77% said Jack who?
Okay, let me ask you this then, Leo.
Yes.
Isn't this our fault? Aren't we the people who should be making this understandable?
I talk about two-factor every freaking day. I tell people all the time private browsing's not private. It's not my fault. Your fault.
Yeah, but maybe it is. But we're not talking to real people. We're talking to people who are already interested in these things. It should be, you know, tech journalists' job to present this in a way that is more understandable by regular people. It's important.
Okay. But I'm not taking responsibility.
So you
Congress.
Go do that. I don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to.
One of the things I heard this when I was in journalism school, and I loved it, and I try to remember it, is the theory of the interlocking public. I come from Mississippi, and there's a kind of undercurrent that people from the Deep South are dumb, which is not true. There are just different things that they're interested in. I think if you took an average person from Mississippi and brought them to Massachusetts, they would know a lot more about how to, you know, skin a deer or fix their car. So I try to remember, like, my husband has a PhD. He cannot update his iPhone software. He just doesn't care. It's just not something
not
he's
important.
Interested in.
It's not important
so
to him.
I do think this is where it's really easy to make fun of stuff like this. But I think I try to see it more as service. Those of us that do understand this stuff, we have a responsibility in our families to help them be safe. And I certainly think government has a role in making sure people are safe online in the same way they are physically safe.
Yes.
So I think it's a function. I don't know everything about the financial regulation market or what we would need there.
Let's be clear. It's not an assertion that people are dumb if they don't know this. Right. That's obviously not true. Frank's not dumb. Nope. But a certain amount of digital literacy probably would be a good thing. I mean, if we could do one thing for security just to get everybody to use two-factor, I just wrote a piece for the AARP magazine on two-factor, what it is, how to use it, and why you should turn it on. So it's not my fault. That's the American Association of Retired People. It's a bunch of old farts. And the editor said, our readers identify with you, Leo. I said, okay, I'll write you a little article there. By the way, next time I need to skin a deer, I'm calling you, Brianna Wu.
I can't help you. I'm sorry.
But you're from Mississippi.
I could tell you a lot about how to fix a car.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know anything about deer.
Or how to reboot a Boxster. Yeah.
I can teach you how to do that.
Hey, we have three people in the studio today from London, from the UK, John, Steve, and Robin. They are accessibility experts. They work with NGOs on improving accessibility. Is that a correct characterization? They're going up to Microsoft. They're going to Google. They're going around visiting. They must be very happy about the most recent Supreme Court decision, which says blind people can sue retailers if their websites are not accessible. The Supreme Court, by declining to overturn a lower court ruling, says that the American for Disabilities Act does apply to digital properties. Just as much as you have to make your Domino's pizza accessible, you have to make your Domino's pizza website accessible. It all from a lawsuit that was filed by Guillermo Robles 3 years ago in Los Angeles. He couldn't order a pizza online because the Domino's website was not accessible. He cited the ADA, which guarantees people with a disability full and equal enjoyment of the goods and services of any place of public accommodations. Domino's says, well, that applies to our brick-and-mortar locations, not to our website. The Ninth Circuit ruled for Robles, and the Supreme Court declined to overturn. So that is, I think, a good thing, something we're going to have to think about. We got to work on our accessibility at TWIT. We do what we can, but I think we could do better. And so
I think, if you think about the spirit of net neutrality, it's making sure people, regardless of income level and background, have access to the same information. And I think if you're for net neutrality, I think it's very hard to be against this ruling. It is costly in some cases to develop total accessibility. The game industry is a really good example. We've repeatedly asked for accessibility extensions because it's very difficult to account for all those use cases there. But I think, generally speaking, making a computer able to read menu information for someone who is visually impaired, I think that's a very low bar, and I was very happy to see this ruling.
We should point out Microsoft has done some really good work, at least with their advertising on accessibility. They have an accessible Xbox controller designed for people with difficulty using a regular controller. I think companies are doing good work. Roland in our chat room points out the cost of Domino's website upgrade was going to be less than $40,000. They spent far more in lawyers' fees taking it all the way to the Supreme Court and lost. So maybe that's not such a bad thing. Finally, good news. A Nobel Prize in Chemistry awarded to three scientists for creating lithium-ion batteries. John Goodenough of the University of Texas at Austin, M. Stanley Whittingham of Binghamton University, and Akira Yoshino of Meijo University will share the Nobel Prize and the $9 million Swedish kroner. This was announced on Wednesday. Goodenough is 97 years old. He's the oldest laureate to receive a Nobel Prize in any discipline. And he gets pride of place as the first to think of the idea of using lithium ion for batteries. Obviously, the most important battery invention of our times. Without it, no cell phones, no laptops, no AirPods, and none of that, whatever that is. Hey, we gotta wrap this up. But it's such a pleasure to have you. I wish we had another 4 hours to talk because you are a great panel. I really appreciate it. Nate Langson, he writes for Bloomberg. He's their European tech editor. He's also a Taylor Swift fan. And widely known as a Taylor Swift fan. UKTechShow.com. Anything you want to plug? Uh-oh, he's frozen solid.
Frozen. No.
I thought he was just grumpy.
We apparently have lost.
Poor Nate has frozen in the middle of a frown, I feel bad for. UKTechShow.com. Text message the UK Focus Technology Podcast.
He made it almost all the way to the end.
Yeah, text message everybody. I like that name, text message, by the way. That's TECH apostrophe S. Patrick Beja is well known for his English and French language podcasts. The English ones are at frenchspin.com. He does Le Rendez-vous Tech, also in Français. Great to have you. Anything you want to plug, not Patrick?
Sure. We talked a lot about politics, China, and a few other things. I'd recommend you check out the Phyllis Club, which is on FrenchSpin.com. It's a show where we talk to people from different parts of the world and different opinions. And we had a couple of specials which might interest you. One about China in Africa, where we had someone who's a specialist on China and someone from Ethiopia, actually, Lena, who told us about what they think about the Chinese. And it's very different from what we think about the Chinese.
Interesting.
And another one, just recently, we did the first one of the Brexit saga, where I had an Irishman, a Scot, and an Englishman, one of them being a pro-Brexit person. And believe it or not, we had a thoughtful, considerate, calm conversation, as we always do on this show. And it was very informative. So check that out. It's at FrenchSpin.com.
I'll have to listen to that. And then on Pixels, you talk about the Goose Game.
Yes. I love that game. I love that
what
game.
What is the appeal of it? I don't understand.
Because you're a jerk store. You're a, you're a goose and you're a complete jerk. And you're honking with just humans there trying to do their stuff.
It's fun being a jerk.
That game has shown the world how incredibly entertaining it is to be a goose and to waddle around like a goose and honk at people. It's hours of fun. It's crazy.
It's all about the Goose Liberation Front and understanding what the goose goes through and not eating foie gras anymore.
You're joking, but it's kind of Metal Gear Solid, but with a goose.
Wow.
It's being a jerk has never been as fun as when you're a goose.
Does a goose have an eye patch? So the only problem I have is I had to install the Epic installer to run the damn thing, and I took it off because it kept popping up ads for other Epic games. It made me so angry. I hate it when they wrap these things around
the
game.
Oh, it's a store.
Yeah. It's a store.
Do you have a Switch? It's great on Switch.
Yeah, maybe. I'll put it on the Switch instead. Because on Windows, Buy it twice. It's only $20.
Well, it's $14 on Switch. So.
Oh. Brianna Wu, what a pleasure. Everybody should run and give money to Brianna. support her run. We need people like Brianna in Congress desperately. When is the primary?
It is September of next year, so I'm about
time.
I do, but Leo, I'm about to spend the next 6 months outside in 30-degree weather, knocking on doors, meeting people. We've had 19,000 new registered voters in Massachusetts District 8 in just the last 11 months, which is good. But now I have to go knock on their door and meet them. So, you know, one of the reasons every time you ask me to come on, my team says yes, is because TWIT listeners are so generous in supporting me. So I just want to say thank you. If you want to be part of that, you can go to supportbrianna.com.
Supportbrianna.com. BRIANNA.com. Supportbrianna.com. And if you're in the Massachusetts 8th, you know what you need to do in September. The job is clear. Thank you so much. Now back to the calls. You've got some money to raise.
I do. Actually, the Yankees are about to play.
Oh, no. Forget it then. You're not calling anybody during the Yankees game.
So my husband, I'm a Red Sox fan. I'm a Boston politician. Of course I am. But I'm married to the world's biggest Yankees fan. Tea Party equivalent of a Yankees fan.
That's not good at all.
Yes. Yeah, so this is my duty as his wife.
Paul Thurrott said, I don't care what happens this weekend, but the Yankees better lose.
I like him. That's a good guy.
He's a Red Sox fan. Also from Dedham.
There we go.
We do TWIT every Sunday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific, as long as the power's on, thank goodness. 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern time, 21:30 UTC. You can watch it live, twit.tv/live. There's audio and video streams there. You can also chat while you're watching at irc.twit.tv. But honestly, it's a podcast, so you can listen whenever you darn well feel like it. The key is getting a copy of the show. It's available, as are all our shows, at our website, twit.tv. But you would do us a solid and yourself a solid if you would subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you don't have to think about it. It just appears on your phone as soon as it's been edited and produced, as soon as it comes off the factory floor, almost always in the just in time for your Monday morning commute. And if you are a podcast listener and you say, well, I can't be in the chat room, don't forget we now have forums for all of our asynchronous listeners and viewers, and those are at www.twit.community, and it's a lot of fun in there. There's our Twit community. And many of our hosts are in there. They're all invited, of course. All our shows are represented, and a lot of our great fans. If you want to be in the studio, we had a great studio audience today. Andy and Andrew were here from Toronto. Zach and Zach were here from Phoenix and Danville. And, of course, John, Steve, and Robin from London. If you want to be in studio, we'd love to have you. Just email tickets at twit.tv. That way, if the power's out, we can warn you before you get here, and you won't waste your time. If you're up in Northern California, if you're in the Petaluma area, any day, any Sunday, just come by. Tickets at twit.tv. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Now it's time to go home because this another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye. Doing the Twit.